There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You are listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting every Saturday between 3 and 6. Broadcasting from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti Beach. Absolutely beautiful evening here in Dubai. And looking at the pictures coming through on the big screen from Stoke over in the United Kingdom. A beautiful day in Stoke. Who's it a beautiful day for? Chris McCarty.
Well, thus far, probably no one. Crystal Palace, well, I guess they'll be happy with a point if they come away with 1:15 minutes remaining. It is, it's raining on Stoke is what it is doing right now. They did lead through that wonderful free kick from Jerdan Shaqiri on the stroke of half-time. But James McArthur didn't quite read the script, did the Scottish midfielder. He's levelled things up. And as I'm watching this now, Shaqiri, oh, he's just lost his footing. Oh, he's offside anyway. Doesn't really matter. But we've got 15 minutes on the clock. Stoke are pushing. They have brought off the big man. Peter Crouch has gone off just what moments before James McArthur had levelled things up. So it is Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 1. A reminder, a draw here not good enough for Stoke if results go against them later on in our featured matches. A draw not good enough for one of our featured matches, which is West Brom against Tottenham. Not good enough for West Brom. Delighted to say that joining us is our good friend and a fellow hammer of yours as well, Tom Mucker. It is Adam Bridge, and we will say a very good afternoon to him. Hello, Adam.
I'm nervous. Don't be talking about West Ham. Let's talk about West Brom and Spurs. I can't talk about the Hammers.
Well, Tom just celebrated Crystal Palace goal as if it was a West Ham goal, Adam. I would imagine you did the same, right?
Very much so, and they should have had more. And every moment that Stoke are on the attack is a moment. But I'm glad they've taken Peter Crouch off, because when you need goals, that's the way. Take Peter Crouch off. Clever thinking from Paul Lambert.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. Listen, we will keep an eye on it, and we will get to West Brom. Oh, and what a big chance that. I think it's Wilfred Zaha who's just stroked over the crossbar for Crystal Palace. But listen, Adam, we'll get to the featured match. It is West Brom-Tottenham. I've got to get your thoughts on a number of stories, though, that are making headlines, and I always like getting your opinion on them, Adam. We'll start up my neck of the woods, because a big appointment yesterday in Glasgow. Glasgow Rangers appointing Steven Gerrard, the Liverpool, the England icon, the legend, on a four-year contract. What is being said about it down south? A good move for Steven Gerrard and a good move for Glasgow Rangers?
I think it's a real split of opinion, actually. I think some people think he's very brave, and then other people think he's quite foolish. There is a huge gulf right now between where Rangers sit and where Celtic sit, and when you are in a league that is dominated by those two, where in theory you could go the entire season unbeaten and just lose to Celtic, and it potentially costs you your job. So I think it's a huge ask for someone for their first gig to step into the cauldron that is football in Glasgow. But I was really impressed with him yesterday. I thought the way he spoke, the fact that he wanted to put to one side all the conversations about how much money they've got to spend, how they're going to plan to go forward, and all the rest of it as private, and just get yesterday in front of the world's media, in front of all those Rangers diehards out the way. I thought he did a fantastic job. And, you know, if he does turn out to be half the coach of the player he was, then it's an inspired move by Rangers. But as we saw with Barnsley all those years ago, it can be a risk, and I think time will tell. But he looks keen. He's itching to get started. And I think we all know Steven Gerrard was always a thinking footballer, apart from that day he slipped over, of course, and cost Liverpool the title. But we all know he was a thinking footballer, and I think that ability he'll take forward. I think it's a good move, and I think it's only good just to lift Scottish football again back into the forefront of everyone's minds.
Absolutely, it's a shot in the arm for Scottish football. And of course, Brendan Rodgers, his former mentor, not so much mentor, but former manager on the other side of Glasgow as well. It does add that little bit more intrigue in Scottish football moving forward. From a young manager just starting out in his career then, to a manager who used to proclaim himself as the special one. Got to get your thoughts, Adam, on last night's performance from Manchester United, and more so the comments made by Jose Mourinho in the aftermath, where he questioned journalists for questioning him. There's a sense, well, certainly I got the sense last night, Adam, that one or two players have just sealed their exits from that football club this coming summer.
Undoubtedly, and it doesn't come as any great surprise to me that I like him. I like his attitude. I like his honesty. I like the way he goes about things. You know, while Pep Guardiola wants to play total football, Mourinho's philosophy will still continue to be, once we get one or two in front, then we play from the back and we make sure we don't lose the game. And that's his way of approaching it. And nobody can question that that's been a successful way. Whether that will work for Manchester United over 10, 12 years in the same way it did for Fergie, or even 3 or 4 years, I think is questionable. But, you know, there's no doubt he's being honest in his approach. And I have been thoroughly disappointed by Martial season after season. I think Rashford has got the natural ability, but it still needs some nurturing. I think Fellaini, why on earth he's offering him a new contract, I'll never understand. Darmian was a complete and utter waste of money. So I think you can go through the entire team and you can find the 4 or 5 players he's probably talking about who won't play for Manchester United again next season. But how many times each summer can Manchester United rebuild? There's a Man U fan I know who tweeted yesterday, oh, we're going to have a clear out in the summer. Well, that's the 5th clear out in 5 summers. You can't keep doing it. So I think we'll see the back of Martial, we'll see the back of a few more, but you've got to admire his honesty, and I like the fact he's come out and said, you ask me about Lukaku, that's why he plays every week, because this lot ain't good enough.
Yeah, Manchester United taking on your beloved West Ham on Thursday evening at their second, their penultimate game of this Premier League season, and all eyes will turn to Wembley for that Emirates FA Cup final against Chelsea. Well, let's come back to the featured match and we'll continue the manager theme. I'll ask you this question, Adam. Why on earth did West Brom take so long to sack Alan Pardew? Had they done it a little earlier, Darren Moore, and I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but Darren Moore may well have kept this team in the division.
I can't answer it, Chris. I live not far from there. I'm about 12 miles away. And I don't understand what it was, because I thought they had the ideal opportunity. The debacle in Barcelona was the moment that they could have quite easily said, listen, you've not got control of this football club. You have no control over these players. Therefore, it's time for you to depart. Having, you know, supported a side that Alan Pardew has managed before, I think when I was in conversation with our head of media the other week, he said everyone's come to us after we employed him saying, why have you given him a job? But no one came to us and told us that before. Of course they didn't. But, you know, he's had an enigma about him. I mean, I've heard stuff about the Barcelona trip that I think they trained in total while they were there for about 3 hours. They had been out on the town the night before. You know, it wasn't necessarily Jake Livermore driving the taxi. You know, there are several stories going around about what really happened. But what that told me was that Alan Pardew was not in control of that football club. So you can forget everything else. You can forget all the rubbish on the pitch. You can forget the poor performances and their inability to win. The fact is, he had no control over those players. They had no respect for him whatsoever. And at that point, West Brom should have cut their losses and run. But again, it's a club that's been financially prudent over the years. And they do often get rid of their managers if necessary, but they just took too long over Pardew.
Darren Moore, for you, 2 wins and 2 draws, a famous victory at Old Trafford, a big, impressive victory, let's be fair, at St James's Park against an informed Newcastle team last time out. Adam, is he the man that you would hand that job to on a long-term basis?
I think it's becoming very difficult for them not to. But I wouldn't, no, because I think on a short-term basis, he's very good at galvanising people. Darren is a lovely man. I've known Darren for years. I knew him there when he was a player. He is a wonderful kind of talker. He's an inspirer. He's very good at pulling people together. He's very well liked. The players desperately want him, and you've seen the difference. You heard them after that game against Manchester United. You know, James McLean said, we now know what we're doing on the pitch. A very barbed point towards Alan Pardew. But over the grind of 46 games in the Championship, has he got the experience and the nous and the know-how to drag West Bromwich Albion up at the first attempt? And I think that's where they're going to be stuck in a quandary. The fans want Darren. The fans would like probably a Michael Appleton. They'd probably like a Graham Potter. They would like a Derek McInnes. But they don't have that know-how. And the club, for financial reasons, obviously, will want to get straight back to the Premier League, which again takes you back to the merry-go-round of managers who've got the experience to get teams out from the Championship. I think Darren's great in the short term, but I'm not too sure the repeated answers of we're together, we're a team, would cut it over an entire season.
Well, I would definitely back Graham Potter, Ostertune's boss, for that job. I know Graham very well indeed, and he is a man who will, no doubt about it, one day manage in the Premier League. Listen, Adam, I want to talk about as well West Brom's opponents today, Tottenham, and I'll take you back. The comments made by Mauricio Pochettino in the wake of their defeat in that FA Cup semi-final to Manchester United. I know he repeated them a couple of times in both domestic and international broadcast interviews that he did about that the club needs to continue moving in the right direction, whether it's me or another coaching staff in place. Now, what's been said and written about this? Was that a little comment in the direction of Daniel Levy? What can we read into that? And are you convinced, are you confident that Mauricio Pochettino will still be Tottenham boss next season?
I think he wants a slice of Daniel Levy's £6 million a year. I think that's probably part of the reason for it. I think it took everyone by surprise, actually. I mean, that was what came out of that for me, from anyone you listen to, whether it was ex-Spurs players or players who played the game. I know Ian Wright drew reference to it quite pointedly. It's the first time they've ever heard him use words like that and make a statement like that. Now, is that a sign that there's a job on the horizon that he quite fancies? I don't think the Real Madrid job is going to come up now. I think they'll probably hang on to Zidane a bit longer just because of his Champions League success. So I'm not sure Pochettino's openly got somewhere to go, but I think it's definitely a message to Levy to say, you're going to have to back me because I want to achieve stuff here, and if you don't back me, someone else will. And I think we should be celebrating a goal right now, Chris.
Yeah, I think you should be celebrating a goal, Adam. Yeah, let's break away from Adam Bridge for just a second. There has been a goal and a huge one at that at the Bet365. 85 minutes on the clock. Tears in the stands at the Bet365. It is Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 2. Stoke have thrown everything at Crystal Palace, everything but the kitchen sink, and it's a breakaway. And it's a man that gets goals, far too many goals from left-back position, in all honesty. He's a dream in the Fantasy Football League. Patrick Van Aelt, he just runs through. Jack Butland makes himself big, and he just coolly slots it underneath the England number one. It's a fine finish, this. Stoke, well, they've committed men forward. Kurt Zouma, where on earth he's going, I'm not quite sure. Patrick Van Aelt, though, he's there. Ryan Shawcross tries to cut it out, can't do it. Beautiful finish that from Van Aelt, just waiting for Jack Butland to make up his mind, and he just strokes it through the legs into the bottom, not even the bottom corner, through the centre of the goal. Jack Butland disconsolate, Ryan Shawcross disconsolate. They are 3 minutes away, our Stoke, from what is essentially relegation from the Premier League. And to come back to you, Adam, you're obviously happy as a West Ham fan. That's another team doing your job, which you should have done a long time ago, Adam. But listen, before I let you go, I want to look forward 3 weeks, and I'm... It is a little. I do apologise. I've got Tom Achert alongside me as well, Adam. He's a big West Ham fan.
Yeah.
But listen, before we let you go, I want to talk. I know we're 3 weeks out from the Champions League final, but put into your own words at Liverpool what went on in Rome, and look ahead to this one for us. I'm looking forward to it. I don't support Liverpool. I'm a Manchester United fan, obviously, being a local Mancunian. But I want a good game, and I think we're going to get one, aren't we?
Yeah. Yes. I think we certainly will get a good game. I think there's no doubt about that. And I've been saying it for months now. On that day, they'll beat anybody with that front line. The question is, can they shore it up enough at the back to be able to see a game out? Because as we saw on Wednesday night in Rome, there were moments of panic. I know it was 2 goals in the last 5 minutes, so never really. But that ability to defend, they just don't have it. And I saw it at West Brom a couple of weeks ago when he brought a third centre-half on. They just drifted back into their shell and they allowed West Brom to attack them, and West Brom ended up scoring. We saw it against Rome again when he tried to block things up by bringing Clavin on and play the three centre-halves. It's just not what Liverpool do. Do what you are good at. You're an attacking side. Keep that attacking threat. Keep the opposition on their toes. Constantly have in their minds that you are going to be a thorn in their side through to the final whistle, rather than this tactic of Klopp for the last 10 minutes of games, trying to close it down with a bunch of players who can't close games of football down. He's not Mourinho. He doesn't have that defensive quality that he builds within a side. So for me, against Real, it's going to be a cracking final. It will be end-to-end stuff, but Liverpool have got to stay on the front foot for the 90 minutes. That is their best chance of winning the game, because they will concede goals at some point, but if you stay on the front foot, I believe they can outscore anybody.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, sadly, as well, Adam. Listen, always a pleasure, my man. You're lighting up the show on a Saturday afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us. Look forward to the game. I'm not going to ask you for team news. West Brom are down. Tottenham will finish in the top four. We'll do the team news when we come back. Adam Bridge, top man. Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Big thanks to Adam Bridge for joining us live on the line there. He's the man calling the game for you from 6 o'clock here, local time in the UAE. Adam, as was just explained there, a West Ham fan. Interesting, here I am sat with you. And I'm working out that not only am I supporting West Ham this afternoon, I'm supporting Newcastle, Tottenham, Bournemouth, and I'll have Everton later on as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And West Ham, I think, you know, tongue in cheek, I think Adam might have been a little bit perturbed by my comment there about West Ham, but it's just all the money you've spent. You know, you're a long-suffering West Ham fan as well. That football club, I'm not convinced. And I never have been that David Moyes is the man long term.
It's bad, isn't it, when you get to the end of a season and you're looking for other, as you said there to Adam, you know, you're looking for other teams to do the job for you, to allocate those spots so that you don't get into them.
And that's a sad indictment from where West Ham are. You know, that new move into the stadium, all the problems that have gone with there, Dimitri Payet wanting to move away. You know, there was a real buzz around that football club for a spell under Slaven Bilic. It's went awry and they just need to clear the decks. And I think with that, stay in the division and then say thanks, David, but no thanks, and then really move the club forward. Unfortunately, with the two Davids, Sullivan and Gold, with Karen Brady there as well, I'm not convinced that they are the right people with the right, you know, the club's interests at heart moving forward long term. And unfortunately, Tom, you'll probably be back here 12 months time talking about the same nonsense.
Best stadium in the Championship. Let's get the thoughts of the two managers of our feature match. It is West Brom against Tottenham. We're going to start with the incumbent manager at West Brom, Darren Moore. Done a great job. He's looking to continue the form. And straight after that, you'll hear from Mauricio Pochettino as he targets third in the table.
What we're just doing here is he's just focusing on the next game. Anything else happening outside of that, obviously you guys will comment on it and build. We can't manage that, but what we're just doing is managing here at West Bromwich Albion Football Club. And you know, it's been some good form we've shown lately, and we're just looking to try and continue that. Anything else happening outside, we're just focusing on here at the football club, on performances and trying to get good performances, which will hopefully equal a good result.
I think up to us is in our hands to finish third, because we have ahead one game more than Liverpool. And then to finish second is not up to, okay, it's up to us because we need to win the three games, but we need to wait that Manchester United lose. But all can happen in football. That is why it's so amazing, that sport, and of course we are going to try.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
We were poking fun at La Liga a little earlier on because of the big game that was down in Spain, Girona against Eibar. They deliver goals, though, that's for sure. That one's finished 4-1 to the visitors. Eibar running out 4-1 winners against Girona. Adai with the goal for Girona, and then two goals for Kike. Jordan and Inui finishing up with a goal in the 89th to make it 4-1 final score in that one. It's also finished up in Scotland as well.
Yeah, same cannot be said in Scotland. A drab affair at Dens Park. It finished Dundee 1, Hamilton Academical 0. I would want my money back after that one, in all honesty. But anyway, Dundee get the victory. Kevin Holt, the left-back, on the score sheet for Dundee. A good 3 points out for Neil McCann's men, and they will be in the Scottish Premiership next season.
We're still waiting for final whistle in the Premier League.
Seconds away. In fact, it's about to blow now. Jack Butland rushing out to take a free kick wide on the left-hand side. He's just looking to get this one in the box. But there is the full-time whistle. Martin Atkinson blows. It is finished at the Bet365 Stadium. Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 2. Stoke look to be now heading to the Championship because, let me just take a look at the table and give you the permutations of what that result means. Stoke then remain 19th in the division. They remain just above West Brom, who will go down without victory against Tottenham. The pictures tell their own story, don't they, Tom? Eric Peters there, they look down. They look down and out. And let me just take a look at it now. Let me just confirm this. So they're on 30 points. Swansea on 33, so they would need Swansea to lose all of their games. They'd need to beat Swansea next weekend, which could happen, and they need Southampton not to pick up a single point. So not mathematically down yet, Tom, but given the goal difference, given the difference, Stoke currently on 30, Southampton on 32, Swansea on 33, West Brom, of course, on 28. It does look, though, got a home match, you've got a Crystal Palace team who are safe, not really much to play for other than pride. You've got to go out and win that game. They've not done so today. Stoke City, I expect to be a Championship team next season.
Aberdeen taking on Hamilton, Motherwell against St Johnson, and Rangers against Kilmarnock. That's the games up in the Scottish Premiership. Why are we telling you those? Well, they're all kicking off at 6 o'clock. And it's that final one that is going to be of much interest, because there are tens of thousands of people down at Ibrox yesterday for the unveiling of a new manager.
Yes, indeed. Steven Gerrard, the Liverpool legend, England legend as well, let's be honest about it, has agreed to take on the poison chalice. And I say a poison chalice because the gap between Rangers and their old firm rival Celtic is huge. financially, on the field as well, and he's taken on the task of trying to bridge and close that gap, taking on his former manager, Brendan Rodgers, during their days at Liverpool. It's a great, we talked about it with Adam Bridge, it's a great story for Scottish football. Whether he'll be a success at Rangers or not, only time will tell. But as you rightly pointed out, 7,000 fans poured into Ibrox to welcome their new hero, their new manager yesterday. A four-year deal as well, so Dave King and the Rangers board clearly feel that Steven Gerrard is the right man in the long term. Of course, contract can be broken very easily these days in the world of football, but he is the new manager. I'm told he will not be there today. Where Steven Gerrard will be next weekend is here in Dubai. I am told that he will continue to do what he was promised to do. He, Gary McAllister, who will be his assistant at Rangers, and Steve McManaman are out, and in fact they're in Barasti next Saturday. They're doing an event with Liverpool next Sunday, because it's the final day of the Premier League season. I am told that he will still honour that commitment, and Steven Gerrard, the new Rangers boss, will be in Barasti alongside Gary McAllister, alongside Steve McManaman. So if you are a Liverpool fan, a Rangers fan, then do pop on down here next Sunday, that for the final day of the season. But yes, the short answer, it's a long one, I know I've rambled, is that Steven Gerrard is the new Rangers.
Well, let's get some context on this one, because you and I watched with interest last night the press conference that he gave. A lot of sort of psychologists, of armchair psychologists, have been giving their thoughts. Maybe he could have smiled more, maybe he could have been more jokey, etc. But when you actually pick the meat off the bones and what he said, and you've done this and taken a few of the clips from what he said, let's just have a listen in to him, and then we'll comment on whether he is a good decision or a good manager or not.
They didn't have to persuade me. I'm well aware of the size of this football club, the history and the tradition. It was a fantastic opportunity for me, and one that I'm really looking forward to. I've got confidence and belief in myself and my staff that we can come in here and make a difference. And we want to give these supporters a team to be proud of, and try and create a winning team. That's the most important thing.
When you were discussing the move, though, I'm sure you had to seek some assurances to make sure that this place was set up in the right way for you to come here. What did you ask of the board?
Lots of questions. I think when you talk about an opportunity, it's very important that you feel like people share the same ambition as yourself. So, it's important that I get the right support and the right people around me, and we become a team. And everyone has that belief and confidence and ambition that we can go on, go on a journey that's full of fun and some good times.
Biggest question, I suppose, is experience. Lack of experience,
yeah, Tom. But again, I'm a big believer that you can only get that experience when given the opportunity. And there will be those out there that say, well, okay, he should have garnered that experience by maybe coaching at a lower level. Rangers Football Club, Glasgow Rangers, is a monstrous club. It's huge. Yeah. It's huge around the world. And he's walking in there to what is essentially a two-team league. I've read Martin Keogh, a former Arsenal, I don't know why he's piping up talking Rangers and Celtic, but he did in his column today, and I just shook my head saying that it wouldn't even be that bad if he doesn't finish second, because Scottish football, Hibs and Aberdeen have come on. Yes, it would be bad if Steven Gerrard doesn't finish in the top two. Rangers' budget is monstrous. It's massive compared to a Hibs or Aberdeen. He's got to go there and go toe-to-toe. They've got to bridge the gap financially, and it's up to Dave King and the Rangers board now to find the funds. There is some suggestion that investment will be coming in the coming weeks, and that would tally with Steven Gerrard signing a four-year deal. Steven Gerrard's not a silly individual. He's going to that football club with a promise of funds to go and buy players that can bridge the gap to Celtic. The one thing that it does do, though, when Celtic play Motherwell in the Scottish Cup in a couple of weeks' time, they can do a second successive domestic treble, for goodness sake. What it does, in my opinion, it puts an extra pep in the step of Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. He'll be excited. Brendan Rodgers, make no mistake about it, he's come out to say it's great to have Steven in Scottish football. He'll want to beat him. You'll want to put him in his place. And I think the dangerous thing, in a weird sort of way, for Rangers and Steven Gerrard is that it'll push Celtic on now, and it'll push Celtic to go out there, keep investing, and it'll give Brendan Rodgers even more reason to get one over on Glasgow Rangers.
Let's hear from Brendan Rodgers now, who will be his crosstown rival come the new season.
Have you spoken to Steven at all?
I haven't, no, not at all. I've sort of left him be, really, because there's obviously, when I'd seen he was linked with it, he'd have his own thoughts on it, and So I've let him be on it, but I'm delighted for him because, he's obviously had an incredible playing career, wanted to manage, wanted to coach, and now obviously gets the opportunity to do that. So I'm sure I'll be looking forward to his first job, and like I say, happy that he now enters into my world of coaching and managing.
You know him very well. What kind of coach will he be? What kind of manager will he be?
Well, I think that's only in time. You're only going to get the chance to see that. Obviously, being Stevie's first job, he'll have an idea in relation to probably how he wants to work. But certainly as a guy, he was ultra-professional. You know, he'd incredible quality as a footballer. And like I say, that level of professionalism that he's had all his career, that's what made him the great player he was. So I'm sure he'll take a lot of those attributes into his management. I think only over time will you see the identity of his teams and how they want to work and how they want to play. But like I say, that'll be something that I'm sure he'll look to impose on his team.
And how much are you looking forward to the next Celtic Rangers game when you get to come up against him?
Well, listen, we've had six already, I think it is this season. I think we certainly play each other often enough. So, but yeah, that's for later on. I think, like as I said, it's something that, you know, when you make your first step into management, there's always that wee bit of trepidation. It doesn't matter if you played the game to his level or haven't played the game. There's always huge differences, really. Once the spotlight's on you and the curtains go back, then it's a different sport altogether. And I'm sure you'll find that out.
And what does it say? Sorry, what does it say about Scottish football when the Scottish game can attract names such as yourself and Steven Gerrard to the game?
Well, I think it's obviously fantastic for the profile of the league. And like I say, I've thoroughly enjoyed my time up here. You know, it's nearly two seasons I've been here, and it's very authentic in terms of the football. It's real. I think Stevie will find that when he's here. You know, a lot of very honest guys, a lot of fantastic coaches and managers. The passion he'll identify with, for sure. And like I say, to live up here, it's a wonderful place to live. So I'm very much sure he'll really, really enjoy it. Of course, he'll want to do well with his team. And that's the only thing I can't wish him the very best with. Everything else I can help and support.
I've heard Glasgow described in a number of ways during my time, but authentic's a new one for me.
Yeah, authentic's an interesting word there, and he doesn't help himself, does Brendan? He says that it's real football up here. I know what he's getting at, but of course it can be miscued at times. But yeah, listen, Brendan talks a good game there. All the platitudes, everything you'd expect Brendan Rodgers to say, he has said. But yeah, watch this space. There'll be fireworks there, and Stephen will want to get one over. Stephen Gerrard will want to get one over, and Brendan likewise. And the big thing, whether Stephen Gerrard is a success or not at Rangers Football Club, it is great for Scottish football once again.
It's good to see he's brought his translator in, Gary McAllister, just in case there are any language
just in case,
issues.
Yes indeed. The confirmation from Stephen Gerrard yesterday that his former Liverpool teammate Gary McAllister will be his assistant boss. And yes, if there are any issues with translation from Scouse to Scots, then Gary McAllister is on hand to ensure that the boys know exactly what Stephen Gerrard is asking of them.
You will, I'm sure, will get the thoughts of a number of former Rangers players in the weeks to come. We'll get the thoughts of Dale Gordon in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, he played a bit of football up there as well. Is he on with you on Monday?
Yes, on Monday, yeah.
So you'll be able to hear that one on Monday. Between 7 and 9, we'll get the thoughts there. Let's get the thoughts now of another former Rangers alumni, Paul Gascoigne. Gazzers waded in with his Penisworth.
With fans like that behind you, nothing's a risk. Believe me. I mean, if I was having a bad game, which I never did. Sorry, I just threw that one in. When you've got the fans behind you and you feel a bit down, and because even off the season, if I had problems off the season, which I did, I admit that, but when you get the fans behind you, it just gives you another lift. There's going to be pressure because it's Glasgow Rangers. See, I remember I used to take the mickey out of Terry Butcher and Chris Woods and that, being at Rangers, and he always said, don't mock it until you try it, and I tried it, and I'll tell you what, it is tough, because you've got to remember that every player you played against wanted to play for Glasgow Rangers. 2.5 years I spent there. If I wish anybody could wish me, what 2 years would you have? Well, obviously, they're Manchester's, but fantastic club, and it's great that they've got them on board.
Did you get any of that?
I got zero of that, in fairness. I think we should translate Gaza there. Great to see, great to hear him, though.
No, that's exactly that, yeah.
He's healthy, well, healthier than he has been in previous years, and he knows, yeah. And someone actually likened it to his arrival at Glasgow Rangers back in 1995 when he joined from Lazio, that the Rangers fans, that there hasn't been this buzz around the football club since then. So that is a good thing. There's a feel-good factor around it now. They've just got to ensure that they go out, spend money on the right players this summer, so to give Stephen Gerrard the best possible opportunity of stopping Celtic from making it 8 in a row next year.
We did the NFL draft a little earlier on. Got the thoughts there of Ross Crist. He's going to take us on a wide journey of American sports. Now, where are we heading to?
We're going to head to the state of Kentucky because it is the first weekend in May. It's the first Saturday in May, which means it can only be one thing. It is the 144th running of the Kentucky Derby. 20 horses. Only one can be the winner. Some big horses coming into this one, including Good Magic, Justify, Hoffberg, Bolt de Oro, My Boy Jack, and Noble Indy. But boys, everyone, the nation, the world actually, anyone who follows horse racing will be zoned in on Kentucky, and everyone will be watching to sing My Old Kentucky Home.
My Old Kentucky Home. In all the world of sports, there is possibly no more moving experience for both the spectator and participant than the playing and singing of My Old Kentucky Home as the horses step onto the track at Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby. Although the exact history of the playing of My Old Kentucky Home on Derby Day is unclear, it is believed to have been first played in 1921 at the 47th running of the Kentucky Derby. It's said that 1930 could have been the first year the song was played as the horses were led to the post parade. And when it was played on radio, the fans cheered loudly. Since 1936, with few exceptions, the song has annually been performed by the University of Louisville Marching Band. The entire Derby Day crowd joins to sing the words to the song composed in the 1800s by Stephen Foster. To honor Foster, Churchill Downs created the Stephen Foster Handicap in 1982, which now serves as the richest spring meet stakes race outside of the Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks. My Old Kentucky Home became the official state song of Kentucky on March 19th, 1928.
Horses will race at 6:37 Eastern Standard Time, American time, so you're going to have to get up early in the morning. I believe that will be 3:30 a.m. here. If you want to tune in for that, for the race for the Triple Crown, it is the biggest race in America when it comes down to horse racing. It is the Kentucky Derby. You will see people out there in their dresses, in their hats. It is amazing. The whole entire state of Kentucky looks forward to this one every year. So tune into that one, all you horse lovers out there. Let's switch attention now and head over to the NBA because we are in full swing with the NBA playoffs. And boy, those New Orleans Pelicans, they surprised a bunch of people last night by knocking off the Golden State Warriors 119-100. These teams were going at it, and you know, everyone kind of picked the Warriors to maybe go through this series quite easily. However, in the last series, they lost Game 3 to the Spurs. This was Game 3 right here. The Pelicans played great. Anthony Davis played great. 33 points, 10 boards, 3 assists. Klay Thompson had 26 points, 7 rebounds, and 1 assist. Steph Curry did not play that well in this game. This is his first start back. The last game, he came off the bench. The real story in this game, though, has got to be Rajon Rondo. The crafty point guard from the University of Kentucky played out of his shoes. He was phenomenal, had an amazing amount of assists, had 21 assists. Him and Draymond Green, boy, were they going at it. And he thinks Draymond Green talks too much crap on the court.
That's talking trash on another team. It's kind of just natural for me to respond, you know, not in a crazy way or anything. It's just let them know we're not a pushover. You know, we're here to fight. And, you know, with my guys on the court, I'm going to fight as hard as I can for these guys, whatever it takes. He talks a lot of and it's just part of it. You know, it's we're competing. I don't think it's nothing more than, you know, than what we're battling on the court. He's a great competitor. I love competing against him, and just try to match his intensity.
Try to match his intensity indeed. One guy who really didn't show up to play has got to be star point guard Steph Curry, his first game back in a long time in the starting lineup, and his head coach didn't think he played good at all.
Game two is always the hardest one after you come back from an injury. You know, game one on a return, you got the energy, you got the adrenaline, you're excited. The second game back is always much tougher, and I just thought he didn't look as sharp with his movement. Obviously, he didn't make his shots, 6 for 19, but it, more than that, it was about just the energy, the legs, but that'll come, and it just takes some time.
It'll come and take some time. We'll see how this shapes up in New Orleans for Game 4. Elsewhere across the NBA, the Houston Rockets defeated the Utah Jazz. Ricky Rubio is missing out of that Jazz lineup. The Rockets won 113-92. James Harden, fear the beard. He had 25 points, 4 rebounds, and 12 assists. Rudy Gobert, the Frenchman, had 12 points, 9 boards, but it wasn't enough for the Jazz, who fall down in this series 2-1 against the number one seed out of the West. Elsewhere, we saw, switching sports now, guys, I'm going to switch over to baseball really quickly, because there has been some great games out there. The Pittsburgh Pirates defeating the Milwaukee Brewers in an NL Central showdown. They won 6-4. The Minnesota Twins defeated the Chicago White Sox 6-4. The KC Royals defeat the Tigers 4-2. Boyer picks up the win there. He goes to 1-0 on the season. The St. Louis Cardinals beat the Chicago Cubs 3-2. They moved to 18-2 on the season. The LA Dodgers had 4 runs in this game, and guess what? The Padres had no hits. A no-hitter combined between 4 pitchers for the Dodgers. Simply unheard of for Dave Roberts' squad. Very, very good. But the real story, gentlemen, coming out of baseball and all sports has got to be Albert Pujols. The Los Angeles Angels defeat the Seattle Mariners 5-0, and Albert Pujols makes history with his 3,000th hit.
10 years ago, I asked Tony Gwynn which hitter in today's game reminded him most of himself. Surprisingly, he named Albert Pujols because, Gwynn said, Albert hits the ball where it's pitched better than anyone. He's not just a power hitter.
Way, way, way out of here! Wow! Wow!
He's a great, great hitter. 10 years later, Pujols has become the 32nd member of the 3,000 Hit Club. He also joined Alex Rodriguez and Stan Musial among those with 3,000 hits and 3 MVPs. And he became the 4th member of the 3,000 hit 600 home run club, joining Rodriguez, Hank Aaron, and Willie Mays. Pujols' power overshadowed his ability to put bat to ball.
That ball is hammered. A liner on its way. Adios!
He has never struck out 100 times in a season, and in 2003, his 212 hits and 359 average led the National League.
The track, to the wall, Albert does it again!
Pujols' first 10 seasons were arguably the greatest first 10 seasons that any player has ever had. And even though he isn't the same hitter that he used to be, he is, by any statistical measure, one of the 3 best first basemen of all time, behind Lou Gehrig and slightly ahead of Jimmy Fox. As for the greatest right-handed hitters in history, a good case could be made for Pujols in the top 5 with Mays, Aaron, Hannes Wagner, and Rogers Hornsby. Great company indeed.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Live Super Rugby on at the moment. It's on down here at Barasti as well if you want to come and watch your rugby. Stormers against Bulls, so it's the all-South African affair, and it's the Stormers who are bossing this one at the moment, but not by much. Tries from Damian Vilemsa and Vilko Lu have seen them a lot. 12 points. To the Bulls, 7. De Jager going over for the visitors. So it's 12-7 in that game. First half still ongoing in the world of Super Rugby. And talking of rugby, massive day for rugby fans on both sides of the equator. And I'm also up in the Northern Hemisphere. It's the final day of the Viva Premiership and all sorts of games to look forward to there. Bath take on London Irish. Quins are at home to Exeter. Newcastle at home to Wasps. Northampton at home to Worcester. Sale Sharks entertain Leicester. And Saris, they've got Gloucester. What's on stake here? Well, it's all those teams looking to finish in the top 6 so as to compete get together for the playoffs for the Aviva Prem later on. But this is the final day of the Aviva Prem proper. Plus, quarterfinals in the Guinness Pro 14. Munster taking on Edinburgh. That one at 6:15 this evening. And then Scarlets taking on the Cheetahs. And the final day of action over in France as well. Brive against Bordeaux. Castres against Oyonnax. Clermont against Toulouse. La Rochelle against Stade Francais. Lyon against Montpellier. Pau against Toulon. Now Racing taking on Agen. All those games kicking off at 11 o'clock this evening. Sharks against Highlanders in Super Rugby as well, so rugby fans well catered for throughout the rest of the night. Chris McCarty has just been taking in some of the comments coming through from listeners.
We've got a belter. This is tickled me pink, so it is. We mentioned Roy Hodgson a little earlier, and again, not to be disrespectful to Crystal Palace, but Roy Hodgson finding his level. He did great things with Fulham, and no name on this one, but Roy should not have Inter or Liverpool referenced on a CV the same way you wouldn't put any job you had for only a few months, respectively. I've spent longer on the toilet at some clubs than Roy spent at some clubs, says an irate listener. And I should point out, he actually spent 2 years as Inter Milan boss, and he had a caretaker spell as well, did Roy Hodgson at Inter. So a little harsh to point out that, but you're right to say that Liverpool, I guess, he's, what, a year under a season he spent at Anfield? He didn't exactly have the best of times there, but he's a wonderful... Listen, you can't knock what he's done. He's taken Malmo to European Cup finals. He's had great success over in Italy. He's come to England, and he's done good things with Palace, certainly keeping them in the division. And a lot of you pointing out, yes, OK, maths isn't a strong point, that Stoke, with defeat by Crystal Palace today, are already down, Tom. They've played 37 games. Just due to the fixtures of the teams around them, it does mean that there's obviously various permutations that mean they can't get they simply can't get to the number of points required to stay in the division. So they are relegated today. Our Stoke, a sorry way to go as well. They were leading 1-0. They went a bit kamikaze in that final 25 minutes in search of a winner. It didn't come, it didn't materialise. Crystal Palace ended up getting the winner. Stoke City then are heading back to the Championship. And I said to you off air, I'll say it on air now, it could be a long way back for Stoke. You look at that squad, it's not great. And there's a reason why they've been relegated from the Premier League. There'll be a lot of players, Joe Allens of this world, Jerdon Shaqiri's, Jack Butlins, I think Ryan Shawcross as well. There'll be a few of those players that will interest Premier League clubs. And I think it could be a long road back for Stoke.
Cricket-wise, what's happening in the IPL? Chennai taking on the Challengers at the moment. Remember, Challengers got 127 for the loss of 9 wickets. Chennai in response for 126 for the loss of 4. So that means they need 2 runs to win. And they've got 2 overs to do it. I reckon they might do it. We'll keep an eye on that one for you. Sunrise take on Delhi a little later on. Earlier on this week, Australia Cricket, or Cricket Australia, made an announcement that they hope will try and silence some of the critics of Australian cricket, which in itself has been in the doldrums over the last couple of weeks. They have a new man in charge, and he is Justin Langer.
I think one of the things that's really important is that we keep looking to earn respect. To me, respect's worth more than all the gold in the world, so earn respect on and off the cricket field. I think also another really important foundation over the last 6 years in Western Australian cricket is that we look to encourage great cricketers but also great people. So if we can encourage great cricketers and great Australians over the next 4 years, starting from day one, I think that's a really important foundation for us. It's not just about how we play our cricket, it's also about being good citizens and being good Australians.
Saying the right things, isn't he?
Seems like he is, but I gotta go to my friend who follows Australian cricket like the back of his hand, one of my best buddies, Ben. You know him, Chris. And he says, this is just another guy from the old group of guys. He's the same breed. He's the same type of captain and vice captain of Warner and Smith, and more on the Warner side of things. So it's just like, I thought we're trying to get a new image, and you go back to the frat boy running the cricket team.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about it. He's had... Justin Langer, a fine player, respected, but you're right to say that it is still one of those players that were wrapped up in your Darren Lehman era. He's had great success with Western Australia. He's had success with Perth Scorchers. So on paper, Tom, he looks good. I know Jason Gillespie was mentioned. He's had great success with the Yorkshire, but it's muchness and suchness in many respects. And Justin Langer will now need to ensure there's probably a new code of ethics and a new code of conduct and all of that stuff. And he'll be warned that you've got to toe the party line. But whether you lose something from him doing that remains to be seen. But he's got a 4-year deal as well.
They will say the right things. We saw this after the Phil Hughes tragedy, where Australia came out and they were very benevolent and they said the right things and they said they need to change the way things are being done in Australian cricket. It lasted for a couple of months and they were back to their old tricks. So this is going to be an interesting thing. Justin Langer is saying the right things at the moment. But as you say, he's old school, he's old guard. He's been involved in a couple of incidents in the past as well. He's not one of those players to step backwards and away from the aggressive side of the game. So let's see what he imparts on his new team,
indeed.
New culture.
Indeed.
I wish people would stop using the word culture. It's the buzzword in sport at the moment, is it, culture?
Yeah, you've got to create a culture.
Talking of culture, we've got a couple of minutes. I just want to have a quick one about Rafa Nadal. I know we spoke about this last night. I want to get Christo's thoughts on it as well. Before we do that, just lead into that. These are the thoughts of Peter Fleming. He's been talking about Rafa Nadal on clay. Have we got to the point now where Nadal is scaring other players away from competing on clay?
It's so very hard to see anything other than total triumphant domination period throughout this European clay court swing? Because we know he won't tire of his success. It's up to somebody to do something, but I don't think there is anybody, is
there? Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think there is a chance that Rafa can get a little bored in a week or two before the French Open, but we really do need one or two guys, whether it's Del Potro or Thiem or somebody, to step up and say, you know, I can do this. I'm ready to compete with them and raise their game, because, as you say, the game needs it.
Yeah, and watching Rafa today, it's you know, and we did talk about it with him last week, and he was in Monte Carlo, and he said, look at the beautiful surroundings. I've been out of action for a few months. Why should I get tired of this? Why should he? I mean, why would anybody in the circumstances? That's just not going to happen, Peter, is it?
No, the only reason that he might have retired or felt bad about his life was if he was not physically fit, if he was hurting, you know, because pain is no fun. And now that he is out of pain, he's enjoying himself. And as you say, winning is fun.
So it's a fantastic...
Those are the thoughts of Peter Fleming talking about the domination of Rafa Nadal. You know, taking on Tsitsipas in a final for the Barcelona on the clay. It was a foregone conclusion almost before the tournament had started. But that theory, that idea, that the big guns, the big names are trying to stay away from being drawn against him in a draw.
Well, the last 46 people that played him on clay would probably want to stay away from him, because he has a 46 clay win streak right now, which is currently a record in the Open era. Rafael Nadal came out and said he's in trouble now every time he goes on the court, because he's so good and his opponent is so desperate. And he feels that his opponent is so desperate, that's why he's worried about playing tennis right now on clay, because of the desperate situation of his opponents. But what he's been able to do, simply amazing. Madrid Open coming up, you know, that's his tune-up. That's normally his... You know, his first little hurdle before coming into the French, so he'll do quite well.
We've got this sort of perfect storm, haven't we, Riccardi, because we've got some very high-profile injuries, got some big names coming to the end of their careers as well. It seems to be the buzzword that players are cherry-picking the tournaments they want to play in, they're managing their schedules more. And in the midst of all that, you've got Rafa Nadal, who is, in his own right, is managing his schedule, and his schedule is clay. No one else wants to play him on clay. He's just got to walk in the park. Might as well give him a bye.
Essentially, yeah. And I've gone as far as to say that. He will win this. And listening to Peter Fleming there, you're clutching at straws when you're saying if Rafa gets bored. He's not going to get bored. If he stays fit and healthy, no one beats him. And the reason I say that is three sets on clay is one thing. Five sets on clay, there is no one grinding down. Right now, Rafa Nadal over five sets on clay. He will win an 11th French Open. That will take him on to, 17? He will be three behind Roger. Roger's cherry-picking Australia, Wimbledon, try and get himself fit for the US. Rafa, definitely fit for the clay court season, because he knows it's an absolute gimme. And then he's trying to obviously look in towards Wimbledon and then in the US himself. So they're kind of going for tit for tat on that. And they are going to manage their schedules a lot more in the next year or two. They want to add titles. And with Andy Murray, with Novak Djokovic injured, Dominic Thiem not ready yet for me, Zverev not ready yet for me, Rafa and Roger will continue to dominate.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure as always. Ross, Chris, thanks very much indeed to you.
Yeah, don't forget, Monday night, come on down to Perry and Blackwaters. We'll be doing that pub quiz. Starts at 8 o'clock, free of charge. Chris McCarty and the gang will be there for Monday Night Football. And I believe Dale Flash Gordon's also there, former Rangers player. So get his advice on Monday Night Football. That'll be fun.
He will be down. So it's Ross upstairs, us and the boys downstairs. Take your pick.
Looking forward to it. Thanks very much indeed to you, Chris McCarty, for all your hard work.
Yeah, thank you very much. Sorry, Stoke City fans. You boys are down.
Stoke are down, and there is more to come.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.